No mention can I find of this damned thing in any other publication. Of course there is an alternative here, the thing may not have fallen from the sky, if in coal-forming times, in Scotland, there were, indigenous to this earth, no men capable of making such an iron instrument, it may have been left behind by visitors from other worlds. In an extraordinary approximation to fairness and justice, which is permitted to us, because we are quite as desirous to make acceptable that nothing can be proved as we are to sustain our own expressions, we note that in Notes and Queries, 11-1-408, there is an account of an ancient copper seal, about the size of a penny, found in chalk, at a depth of from 5 to 6 feet, near Burdenstone, England. The design upon it is said to be of a monk kneeling before a virgin and child. A legend upon the margin is said to be, St. Jordanes Monachi Spaldingi. I don't know about that. It looks very desirable undesirable to us. There's a wretch of an ultra-frozy thing in the Scientific American, 7-298, which we condemn ourselves, if somewhere, because of the oneness of allness, the damned must also be the damning. It's a newspaper story, that about the 1st of June, 1851, a powerful blast, near Dorchester, Massachusetts, cast out from a bed of solid rock a bell-shaped vessel of an unknown metal, floral designs inlaid with silver, art of some cunning workman. The opinion of the editor of the Scientific American is that the thing had been made by Tubal Cain, who was the first inhabitant of Dorchester. Though I fear that this is a little arbitrary, I am not disposed to fly rabidly at every scientific opinion. Nature, 35-36. A block of metal found in coal, in Austria, 1885. It is now in the Salzburg Museum. This time we have another expression. Usually our intermediatist attack upon provincial positivism is, science, in its attempted positivism takes something such as true meteoritic material as a standard of judgment, but carbonaceous matter, except for its relative infrequency, is just as veritable a standard of judgment. Carbonaceous matter merges away into such a variety of organic substances, that all standards are reduced to indistinguishability. If, then, there is no real standard against us, there is no real resistance to our own acceptances. Now our intermediatism is, science takes true meteoritic material as a standard of admission, but now we have an instance that quite as truly makes true meteoritic material a standard of exclusion, or, then, a thing that denies itself is no real resistance to our own acceptances, this depending upon whether we have a datum of something of true meteoritic material that orthodoxy can never accept fell from the sky. We're a little involved here. Our own acceptance is upon a carved, geometric thing that, if found in a very old deposit, antedates human life, except, perhaps, very primitive human life, as an indigenous product of this earth, but we're quite as much interested in the dilemma it made for the faithful. It is of true meteoritic material. In L. Astronomy, 1887-114, it is said that, though so geometric, its phenomena so characteristic of meteorites exclude the idea that it was the work of man. As to the deposit tertiary coal, composition iron, carbon, and a small quantity of nickel. It has the pitted surface that is supposed by the faithful to be characteristic of meteorites. For a full account of this subject, see Comte's Rendus, 103-702. The scientists who examined it could reach no agreement. They bifurcated, then a compromise was suggested, but the compromise is a product of disregard. That it was of true meteoritic material, and had not been shaped by man. That it was not of true meteoritic material, but telluric iron that had been shaped by man. That it was true meteoritic material that had fallen from the sky, but had been shaped by man, after its fall. The data, one or more of which must be disregarded by each of these three explanations, are, true meteoritic material and surface markings of meteorites, geometric form, presence in an ancient deposit, material as hard as steel, absence upon this earth, in tertiary times, of men who could work in material as hard as steel. It is said that, though of true meteoritic material, this object is virtually a steel object. St. Augustine, with his orthodoxy, was never in very much worse difficulties than are the faithful here. By due disregard of a datum or so, our own acceptance that it was a steel object that had fallen from the sky to this earth, in tertiary times, is not forced upon one. We offer ours as the only synthetic expression. For instance, in Science Gossip, 1887-58, it is described as a meteorite. In this account there is nothing alarming to the pious, because, though everything else is told, its geometric form is not mentioned. It's a cube. There is a deep incision all around it. Of its faces, two that are opposite are rounded. Though I accept that our own expression can only rather approximate to truth, by the wideness of its inclusions, and because it seems, of four attempts, to represent the only complete synthesis, and can be nullified or greatly modified by data that we, too, have somewhere disregarded, the only means of nullification that I can think of would be demonstration that this object is a mass of iron pyrites, which sometimes forms geometrically. But the analysis mentions not a trace of sulfur. Of course our weakness, or impositiveness, lies in that, by anyone to whom it would be agreeable to find sulfur in this thing, sulfur would be found in it by our own intermediatism. There is some sulfur in everything, or sulfur is only a localization or emphasis of something that, unemphasized, is in all things. So there have, or haven't, been found upon this earth things that fell from the sky, or that were left behind by extramundane visitors to this earth. A yarn in the London Times, June 22, 1844, that some workmen, quarrying rock, close to the Tweed, about a quarter of a mile below Rutherford Mills, discovered a gold thread embedded in the stone at a depth of 8 feet, that a piece of the gold thread had been sent to the office of the Kelso Chronicle. Pretty little thing, not at all frozy, rather damnable. London Times, December 24, 1851. That Hiram DeWitt, of Springfield, Massachusetts, returning from California, had brought with him a piece of auriferous quartz about the size of a man's fist. It was accidentally dropped split open nail in it. There was a cut iron nail, size of a sixpenny nail, slightly corroded. It was entirely straight and had a perfect head. Or California ages ago, when auriferous quartz was forming super carpenter, million of miles or so up in the air drops a nail. To one not an intermediatist, it would seem incredible that this datum, not only of the damned, but of the lowest of the damned, or of the journalistic cast of the accursed, could merge away with something else damned only by disregard, and backed by what is called highest scientific authority. Communication by Sir David Brewster, Report British Association, 1845-51. That a nail had been found in a block of stone from King Udi Quarry, North Britain. The block in which the nail was found was 9 inches thick, but as to what part of the quarry it had come from, there is no evidence except that it could not have been from the surface. The quarry had been worked about 20 years. It consisted of alternate layers of hard stone and a substance called till. The point of the nail, quite eaten with rust, projected into some till, upon the surface of the block of stone. The rest of the nail lay upon the surface of the stone to within an inch of the head. That inch of it was embedded in the stone. Although its cast is high, this is a thing profoundly of the damned sort of a Brahmin as regarded by a Baptist. Its case was stated fairly. Brewster related all circumstances available to him, but there was no discussion at the meeting of the British Association, no explanation was offered. Nevertheless, the thing can be nullified. But the nullification that we find is as much against orthodoxy in one respect as it is against our own expression that inclusion in quartz or sandstone indicates antiquity, or there would have to be a revision of prevailing dogmas upon quartz and sandstone and age indicated by them, if the opposing data should be accepted. Of course it may be contended by both the orthodox and us heretics that the opposition is only a yarn from a newspaper. By an odd combination, we find our two lost souls that have tried to emerge, chucked back to perdition by one blow. Pop. Sci. News, 1884-41. That, according to the Carson appeal, there had been found in a mine, quartz crystals that could have had only 15 years in which to form, that, where a mill had been built, sandstone had been found, when the mill was torn down, that had hardened in 12 years, that in this sandstone was a piece of wood with a nail in it. Annals of Scientific Discovery, I 853-71. That, at the meeting of the British Association, 1853, Sir David Brewster had announced that he had to bring before the meeting an object of so incredible a nature that nothing short of the strongest evidence was necessary to render the statement at all probable. A crystal lens had been found in the treasure house at Nineveh. In many of the temples and treasure houses of old civilizations upon this earth have been preserved things that have fallen from the sky or meteorites. Again we have a Brahmin. This thing is buried alive in the heart of propriety, it is in the British Museum. Carpenter, in The Microscope and Its Revelations, gives two drawings of it. Carpenter argues that it is impossible to accept that optical lenses had ever been made by the ancients. Never occurred to him someone a million miles or so up in the air looking through his telescope lens drops out.